Jenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbore and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. The following is a paid program, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent the opinions of the management of this station or Hamel Broadcasting. Good morning and welcome back again, everyone, to Happy Hour. It's Jonna Spilbore, it's Carol Pesci, it is this fella with a Frankenberry name, and we've got another fantastic show for you today, and we have another guest on the way in segment number two, and this particular gentleman, now Jonna has told me he is quite the prolific author.
Oh, that's an understatement. Can I just say, like, I'm looking forward to our talk with Brad Meltzer, because in terms of authors, you know, most authors kind of pick a genre and they stay in their lane. Brad Meltzer has been on the best sellers list basically across every genre that there is. I'm exaggerating only a little bit. Like, he writes in different categories and makes the bestseller list in all of them. And we're going to have a really interesting talk with him today, because not even his latest work, a very recent work called Make Magic, is based off a speech that he made for the graduating class of the University of Michigan in 2024. I have now listened to it a total of 4 times. Wow. Caught something different every time. And the last time I listened to it, and I'm not even going to say this, maybe I should save it for him, I actually teared up a little bit. Me.
Whoa.
Ice Queen. Yes.
The Ice Queen.
The Ice Queen breaking out a box of hankies.
Wow. Nice.
No, I said I shed like a tear, maybe 2. But that's a lot for me.
Hey, that still can require at least a sleeve or a cat. So you still needed something.
A sleeve.
But I think it's going to be a real interesting discussion with him. And so you're not going to want to go anywhere, because we're going to have him coming up after the break. Brad Meltzer is his name.
So do we get to ask about who you have shown up to your alias today, or are you going somewhere else next?
Or is that just because you were here a couple of minutes late and that was just, you know, in the moment?
So this is funny. Yeah. So I was so late. I showed up today as fashionably late that I did not have time to think of an apropos pseudonym as I usually do. So I just went bold. Like, here I am. This is real life. Fashionably late. I should have just said late. I was like, what am I late? That's what I did. But speaking of late, it's funny that you ask if I can. Oh. I mean, that's, you just gave me an impromptu Sagu. And that will be the name of our band, Carol.
When impromptu Sagu?
Impromptu Sagu. I think it should be a girl band, but we can have Frankenberry like on tambourine off to the side looking very bored.
Yes, I can do that. I get a tambourine in one hand and a cowbell in the other. Yes.
Yeah, because we don't want to do it without you. But
we're going to need more cowbell, though, Frankenberry. We're going to need more cowbell.
More cowbell.
Yeah, and I've got the belly for it going on, by the way, too, for a too short T-shirt. Oh, so we're good.
God.
So, all right. So while we're getting the band together, I kind of like have a question / situation. All right. So here's what I'm going to say. Now, before you say anything, Frankenberry, I'm not going to get anyone in trouble. I want to lodge a little bit of a complaint about a restaurant.
Now, is it a general restaurant complaint? Like, if this happens at any place, this would be an issue for you?
Sort of, yeah. And what I really want to do is if we have anybody in the restaurant business, server business, restaurant management business, among our 6 or 7 listeners who are tuned in right now.
Yeah.
I want you to listen up, and if you could maybe shoot me a text and tell me if I'm all wet, or tell me if I'm right on, or, you know, tell me, because here's my, I'm not being highfalutin about this.
This is just like a pet peeve situation.
Yes, but I've thought about it logically. So here is the sitch.
Oh my God.
What?
I was just about to say to you, pause before you continue. Frankenberry, things are looking up because she called it a situation and not a sitch. And then you swear to God. And now you go.
I know. You know what, Carol? It's almost like somewhere in the back of her mind. It said, the back of her mind said, whoa, hold on. Switching gears here.
Could I use all three syllables?
Yeah. We can't do that. My God. No. Did I spell out, by the way, in a text? What's wrong with me?
Why do you guys think that I've matured, like, since last week? Like, please.
Oh, God, I can't believe that was so red on cue. Okay, what's the sitch?
Yes, please tell me what the situation is there.
So, the situation is we have a large party of 10 people who want to go to dinner. And so the large party of 10 people, it's kind of like a little family get together. We got somebody coming in from out of town, blah, blah, blah. So we're kind of making a night out of it. And I had to contact a restaurant to make this reservation. Now, Carol fully agrees with me when I say this part is nowadays when you do want to make a reservation at a restaurant, you do so online, typically through an app called OpenTable. There's one already, but most of the restaurants have signed on to these things, which I think is fantastic. It's great because Carol and I do not like to talk on the phone. Am I right? Or am I right? Like, we hate it. And when, like, if one of us has to call the other, we always pick up the phone like, oh, my God,
who's dying?
Dead? Yeah. Right. So that's what we think of the phone. So, okay. So we come up with this plan, 10 people. We know where we're going. I won't mention the name. So I go on to the OpenTable. I make a reservation for this coming. Well, by the time this airs, it will be last night. And I get all done making the reservation, which is going fine on the website, when all of a sudden I get to the end and it goes, oh, sorry, this restaurant does not accept online reservations for more than 4 people, which is kind of weird, you know. But anyway, so I go, okay, so it said you have to call. So I call. Now, instead of getting the time that I want, the person on the phone says, oh, no, we don't have that time. I'm like, well, it kind of said that you had that time when I was making it online until I got to the end. And she's like, no. Only time we can squeeze in a party of 10 is at 9:30 p.m.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Okay. So now 9:30 p.m. when you have 10 people, as you can imagine, some people are going to be, that's fine. Other people are going to be like, I should be in bed by then.
That's
so it's kind of a weird time. So they say to me on the phone, look, if we get a cancellation, we'll call you and then maybe we can move. So I've been thinking about it constantly since a week ago when I made this reservation. And here's why I think that is such a dumb idea. Here's why. And for the people in the industry, I want you to text me to tell me if you agree or disagree. And that is this. Okay, number one, you have 10 people. 10 people is going to be a big tab. When you seat 10 people at 9:30, when your kitchen probably closes at 10 or 10:30, you're going to have a lot of ticked off service people, wait staff, going, oh, when are these people going to leave? Number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, anything that you have kind of special that night, probably going to be gone, right? Mm-hmm. By the time 10 people sit down for 9:30. But number three, you know that 10 people, you're going to put in your 20% tip automatically. Like, it's not going to be a cheap date. So while I'm not being highfalutin, you would think in restaurant math, somebody there would go, okay, well, we can smoosh these tables together. We can do this. We can do that. Let's get this party of 10 in when we're not going to be here later than we need to be. And they can still enjoy themselves. And we have enough wait staff here to handle that size party. That's how I'm thinking of it. So I call them back later in the week and I say,
because you're getting peeved about it.
I'm getting because it doesn't make sense to me that they wouldn't try to do this. So I call them back and I go, look, you know, I get it. You couldn't get us in until 9:30. How about we go the other way? I said, how about if you get us first instead of last? Like, I can convince these people to have dinner at 5:00. I can convince them to have a blue plate special. So she puts me on hold for 4 minutes and I'm like, this is great. This is going to happen. But for being on hold this long, that means she's getting somewhere. She comes back and she goes, nope. I go, nope. She goes, nope. But if we have a cancellation, we'll call you. Now, you know, cancellations happen when? I'll tell you when they happen because I've canceled a reservation a time or two. They happen the day of. they happen the day of when somebody gets sick or a little you know,
right.
Skins or knee and mom can't go. Whatever. That's when they happen. You can't take a party of 10 at the last minute and go, okay, guys, we got the 5 o'clock. Everybody ready to go at 3? Like, you can't do that. So now I'm thinking my plan is, since I have a few days before Saturday,
just to cut your least favorite family member.
To split it up into 4, 4, and 2.
I was just going to say.
I was going to say that too.
Yes.
Paul made 2 reservations for 5 people.
And can we sit next to each other?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Because I've been to this place. There's a lot of open space. You know, there's tables. They can find tables. Throw a tablecloth on it. Right? Like, why would you? Why?
I don't know.
Wait for two small parties to cancel before you accommodate a large party.
And you know what would be so much fun is if you did go online and you made 3 reservations for a 4 and a 4 and a 2. And then when you got there, and then, you know, if it all worked out, you can find the person that you were on the phone with earlier in the week and say, hey, by the way, I'm the 10 top that you wouldn't take.
Yeah, but not until after you've all eaten.
Yeah.
Nobody's exactly. Food.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't want a special soup for you kind of deal. So I think that I'm in the right. And I also think that if I call them like I'm a bill collector for the next 3 days, twice a day, asking if they've had any cancellations, maybe I will annoy them into just doing what I want. What do you think about that?
That's a possibility.
I would have 2 people who have 2 different open table account names make 2 reservations for 5 people at the same time.
So you want me to I like that. That's a little scammy, but not, you know?
Why not? What's wrong with being scammy? They're not helping you out. Why not?
If you get it, then call back and cancel your 10. Yeah. So it's not like you're screwing them by they're expecting 10 people that aren't going to show up. That you're not going to do that because that would be jerky.
Well, but here's the other thing, you guys.
You just want the time you want.
Here's the other thing. Because
that would be, hold on. I don't use these words. Jerky.
Well, I had something worse in mind, and I'm trying to help you keep your job.
I understand. Thank you very much. I appreciate the concern.
Can I say the word?
No, you can't.
I do like that plan. I do like that plan. The problem with the plan is if we don't get tables next to each other, that could be a little weird, like waving to each other across this restaurant.
Right, but you just said, I mean, you're going to eat, but you're also going to be spending the rest of the evening together. So it's not like this eating is the only thing that's happening.
But also, what if I did that? What if I do that? What if I get 2 parties of 5?
Okay.
And then I call back and I go, "Ha ha, sucker. You just gave me 2 reservations of 5 and 5. Now I'm going to cancel my big 9:30 for 10 people that you wouldn't change for me, even though I called you every day for a week. Sucker." What do you think of that?
No. You just call back and say, "We've had something come up. I need to cancel my 9:30 reservation. We'll look to reschedule when we can. Thank you." And you use a fake voice when you get there.
That's right.
No, here's what I'm going to do. Carol just came up with you know how many $1 million idea we've come up with over the last 13 years? Like too many to count. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Our execution of those ideas is on point too, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. Right, I can count the $5 in my wallet from all of them right now.
Right, because we're 0 for 0, but Carol just came up with another one. And the new $1 million idea is when you need somebody to be your heavy and cancel a reservation, you text Carol. And she calls up very professionally because you might be mad or whatever. Like I might be tempted to say, "Sucker." She's going to call up and go, "Hi, I am the assistant of a person who made a reservation. I am just here to tell you that they need to cancel it. But we love your restaurant and we will reschedule it at some future date and time. But thank you very much." And then she does that and she charges you like $10. I would pay that. I would
pay that. You pay anybody $10 just to make any phone call for you.
I know.
Exactly. And you know what, Carol? The next time she does, you need to use one of those like voice modulators from a movie, you know, where you've just kidnapped somebody. Carol just needs to call and say, "Okay, you have a name of Spillbore on your books. That reservation is dead.
He dines and dashes.
It's wearing concrete shoes.
It's swimming with the fishes. I mean, sleeping with the fishes."
That's right. Because it's dead. You see, it doesn't swim when it's dead.
You guys.
You know what I meant. You know what else we're going to make?
What?
Magic.
Oh, wait. Here you go. Way to go, lady. Congratulations.
Am I on fire or am I on fire? I am on fire.
You are on fire.
Yeah. Okay, so when we come back from the break, assuming anybody's still listening, we are going to have a prolific, profound, multi-genre-al author by the name of Brad Meltzer, who's going to talk to us about his speech turned book called Make Magic when we come back.
All right, that's what we've got. You've also got Jonas Spilborn and Carol Pesci and this fella named Frankenberry, who will return in just a few, so stick around.
Donna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back to Happy Hour with Jonas Spilborn, with Carol Pesci, with this guy, and also with our guest, segment number two, where we always have our illustrious guests. And we are going to be talking today with Brad Meltzer.
Yes, we are. And before we begin, this is the part of the program where I usually give a very brief bio of our esteemed guest, and then we launch into the topic du jour. But I'm going to tell you something right here, right now. In the 13/14 years that we've been doing this show, we have a guest who I could probably spend the next 20 minutes just talking about his life and his body of work, because he is so prolific and so interesting. Like, for example, well, let me start with this. Brad Meltzer is an Emmy nominated number one New York Times bestselling author of The Lightning Rod, The Escape Artist, and 11 other best-selling thrillers. Now, you think I would stop there, but I'm not going to stop there.
Oh, no, no.
Because Brad Meltzer doesn't just dabble in writing thrillers. He writes thrillers. He writes nonfiction. He writes kids' books. He writes other stuff, which makes him some sort of writing unicorn, which I find fascinating. But the thing we are going to primarily focus on today is yours truly was looking through some new releases on Amazon, as I want to do, and I came across a book called Make Magic. Now, for the people who have ADD like me, Make Magic is an audiobook that you can listen to in precisely 20 minutes. I have since listened to this book about six times. And I'm going to let Brad tell you how that book came about, because it didn't start as a book. The other genius of this is this book is based on a viral speech that he gave in 2024 to the graduating class of the University of Michigan, turned it into a book. I've listened to it six times and I have taken away six different things. You hear something new in this 20-minute speech than the time before. So with that really screwed up impromptu bio, welcome, Brad Meltzer, to the show.
Listen, I've been called far worse things, so thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So can we, before we talk about this genius idea, not your words were not only genius, but the idea of turning this speech into a book, I think, was genius. Can you tell the audience a little bit about you? Because honestly, like, we have never had an author who has dabbled in so many, you are proficient in so many different genres. Like, how does your brain work that way?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question I ask myself every day. You know, the truth is I started writing thrillers, and that's where most people will know my name and whatever. I murder people for a living, right? That's the bit. You write a good, you know, the Escape Artist or the Lightning Rod.
He's your idol.
Yeah, exactly. All the and so that's what I made my name doing. And then I had kids, and I was like, oh, I want to write kids' books. And so I started writing a line of kids' books. I am Amelia Earhart. I am Abraham Lincoln. I am Rosa Parks. I wanted to give my kids better heroes to look up to. I got a TV show on the History Channel called Decoded. It was actually called Brad Meltzer's Decoded. Best title of all time. Brad Meltzer's Decoded. I said to my wife the other day, honey, what are we having for Brad Meltzer's dinner tonight? Because yesterday we had Brad Meltzer's chicken, and tonight I'd like to have Brad Meltzer's pasta. And she was like, you can go sleep on Brad Meltzer's couch. But and then I was like, you know what? I want to write historical books. So we started writing. I wrote The Nazi Conspiracy. I wrote The JFK Conspiracy, which just came out. And then I was like, you know, I realized that's what I actually like. I like doing different things. Some people like doing the same thing over and over and they get proficient at it. But to me, all those things, whether it's thrillers or kids books or real history for adults, they all have one thing in common. They're good stories. That's the key of all of them. And they all have one theme in common. And it's my core belief. I believe ordinary people change the world. I don't care where you went to school. I don't care how much money you made. That is nonsense to me. I believe in regular people and their ability to affect change in the world. And so my thrillers, you'll have an ordinary person who just gets above their head and has to find a way out. In the kids' books, I'll tell the stories of, you know, Rosa Parks, or, you know, these are they seem extraordinary, but they were afraid of the same things you and I were afraid of. They just didn't let it stop them. And in the JFK conspiracy, again, we may see them as these, you know, big giant people, but we do them a disservice. They're just regular people like us. And I love telling those stories.
Yeah. And wow. The JFK thing is so timely. Right.
I know.
Now.
I said the greatest marketing, you know, the JFK one. It's actually the JFK conspiracy is a book about a plot to kill JFK, but it's 3 years before Lee Harvey Oswald. And what happens is, just to tell you very quickly about it, it's a beautiful Sunday in Palm Beach, Florida. JFK is on his way to church. He has no idea that there's a disgruntled postal worker named Richard Pavlik who wants to kill him and has packed his car with 7 sticks of dynamite. And he's followed him to Florida because he knows that JFK's security is weaker there, which he's correct about. Wow. And as JFK comes out of his door that morning, all this assassin has to do is hit the little trigger mechanism and boom, will go the dynamite. And I won't tell you what saves his life in that moment. It has to do with Jackie, but it's truly the craziest JFK story you've never heard in your life. And I just ruined chapter one of the JFK conspiracy.
That's okay. That is wild. Can I add, like, this is probably going to sound like a stupid question, and that is my specialty. But when you, because you write in so many different genres, you have so many different lanes, like, how does that inspiration, like, you wake up one morning and go, you know what, I'm feeling a thriller today, or you know what, I'm feeling a nonfiction. Like, how, like, what makes you decide to
write? You know, you ever hear the Supreme Court definition of pornography? It's called, you know it when you see it.
Yep.
Right? We know when we see it. You know what offends you and what doesn't. And to me, it's the same way with stories. I look at a story and I'm like, I remember, here's the perfect example. This is where I started with. I found out years ago, this is true. I got a call from the Department of Homeland Security asking me to come in and brainstorm different ways a terrorist could attack the United States. And my first thought was, if they're calling me, we have bigger problems than anybody thinks, right? And I went in and they paired me with a Secret Service agent and a chemist, and we would have to figure out how to destroy major cities. It was wild. But then I said to my friend, why'd they pick me?
Like, why? I was just going to ask you that.
Right? Why did they pick just a writer who writes thrillers? And I traced it back through history. And it started with a man named George Washington. And George Washington, back during the Revolutionary War, had his own secret spy ring made up of regular, ordinary people. And it wasn't just his top military, it was just regular people. Why? Because he knew no one looks twice at an ordinary person. They were the perfect spies. And I said to my friend at Homeland Security, wouldn't it be cool if you found out George Washington's spy ring still exists to this very day? And I'll never forget, he said to me, what makes you think it doesn't?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, that's a good idea for a book. So I wrote a thriller, mm-hmm. The Inner Circle, about that. I was like, I'm going to write a thriller. What happens if a guy in the National Archives today, Beecher White, finds out that George Washington's spy ring exists today? And he's like, oh my gosh. And he's trapped into figuring out what they're doing and what they're really up to now. I wrote the thriller, but I couldn't shake the story. And I was like, the real story about George Washington is really cool. I want to tell the real story of that. And 5 years went by. I was still thinking about it. And this plot to kill George Washington that they helped foil. There was a true plot to kill Washington at the beginning of the Civil War in New York, not far from the Hudson Valley. The Hudson Valley actually is in there. And I just couldn't shake it. And finally, I was like, I'm going to write a historical book about it. I just knew that story needs to be the real story of what happened. And wow. So every time I find a good story, I'll go like, you know what? That's better for a fiction book. Nope, that's better for a real book. And you just know it when you see it.
And then you just sit down and like, what? 2 weeks later, you got a book?
No, I wish. My thriller, I wish. I mean, there's friend. I know people obviously who put out a book a year. God bless them. They can do it. If I put out a book every year, that would be garbage. Like, I want to put out something that's worth your time and worth reading. You learn something from it. You felt like that was real. And that a thriller takes me 3 years to do. The kids' books, yes, I can do quicker. They're 40 pages. Make Magic, obviously, you know, it's a 20-minute when you listen to it, but that was 6 months of my life putting that together. You know, I wrote it in one, I wrote the whole thing in one day, but I thought about it for 6 months. And I just had it in the back of my head for 6 months from when they asked me to do the speech to when I gave it. I just kept going through it. So I wish I could do them really quickly. It takes me a long time, but you know, that's the way it goes.
Brad, this is Carol. I have a question about your book, Make Magic, which was based on your commencement speech at the University of Michigan. Did I read it, or did you say in your speech that you had some input on how to shape it from Adam Grant and Simon Sinek?
Yeah, so Adam and Simon and Tim Urban have...
Are they buddies of yours?
They're friends of mine for years. And so we met when we were all starting out. We just, you know, I met Simon years ago. He's the one who helped me figure out my why is ordinary people change the world. That's what my belief is.
He is brilliant.
And he's a dear friend. And Adam is, you know, I know forever. And so when I put together the speech, I wrote the speech and then I knew I needed... I don't want to just do something that's feel good, right? I want to do something that you can prove. So I went to Adam and said, hey, can you help me find the social science to back this up? Adam helped me with that. Simon helped me, you know, as you know, obviously you can see in the speech where I call him out by name, you know, and he was so helpful. And we know each other, you know, for well over a decade now. Obviously, it's really helpful when you can call on some of the best names out there to kind of pre-look at your stuff. I never told them the full magic trick when I was doing it, though, because I wanted them to be surprised. So that, you know, and let's talk about the speech. I graduated Michigan and I was asked to do the commencement address, which is amazing to do. It's an amazing honor. You're in front of 70,000 people in a stadium.
Wow.
It's craziness. But I was focused on one because my son was graduating Michigan that mm-hmm. day. So I got 70,000 people, parents, grandparents, everyone comes in, and I've got my eye on the one kid in the 14th row on the aisle. I can see my son sitting there. He got there 2 hours early just to be sure he had a good seat. And he had no idea if I was going to embarrass him or not. In fact, when I told him that I got picked to give the speech in Michigan, you can't make it up. His reaction, the first thing out of his mouth, he said, "You? Not Tom Brady?" And he said, "There's so many people, better people they can pick." And he said, "It's like a 13th seed winning March Madness." And so, as he said it, I literally was laughing. I'm like, I just got the opening to my speech.
And sure did.
And obviously what you saw in the speech is like the speech was all about, you know, there are things that science and math can explain. But there are some things that it can't explain. And those things are to me what magic is. And obviously magic's not real, but there are things that can't be explained. And if you talk to magicians, there are four types of magic tricks that exist. You put aside illusions, put aside escapes. There's four types of tricks. One, you make something appear. Two, you make something disappear. Three, you make two things switch places. And four, you take one thing and you turn it into something else. The hardest trick of all, transformation. And what my speech was, and we can talk about each one, but I went through each of the things of what you need to make appear, what you need to make disappear, what you need to switch, and what you need to transform. And the third part of the speech is the third trick is when I realized something was up, because the third part of the speech is about taking two things and making them switching places with them. And I said, here, let's talk about empathy. Because that's what empathy is, right? It's switching places with someone else and putting yourself in their shoes. And I told this story that when I was 13 years old, this is true. I moved from New York to Florida. My family lost all their money, lost everything. And we had to live with my grandparents. And it was six of us, my mom, dad, my sister, myself, and two grandparents in a one-bedroom apartment.
Oh my gosh.
And back then, everyone in the condo wanted to kick us out. They were trying to get us evicted. Like, you can't have six people in one place. And it was terrifying because every day they were trying to evict us. And this one woman who lived across the hall from my grandmother came to my grandmother and said, "You know what? Why don't you take my apartment? So your family, you'll sleep in my apartment. I'll go sleep, you know, somewhere else, but your family can have some peace and won't be evicted." Nicest thing anyone has ever mm-hmm. done for my family. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid, her name was Mercy. But I always heard her name as a kid as Mercy. And make no mistake, mercy and empathy is what she was showing us. And today, cruelty and venom and harshly judging those we disagree with, that's become sport in our culture. Mm. But cruelty and venom aren't signs of strength. the signs of weakness and petty insecurity. And what takes strength is showing empathy and showing kindness to others. And as I said those lines in the stadium, I felt 70,000 people react in a way that caught me off guard. And I knew, I'm like, what was that? My wife said to me, you hit a vein you didn't know was there.
Yeah.
And after the speech, all these people started asking me, can I have a copy of that speech? Can I get the text of that speech? They tracked down my sister who lives in New York. They're like, I saw your brother in a stadium. I don't know. You don't know me, but I saw him. Can you get me the text of that speech? I've been writing for 25 years. No one has ever asked for the text of anything I've said. But that speech on that day, we were like, what's going on? And it wasn't me, to be clear. It was that we are, as a culture right now, starving for kindness and starving for empathy. Mm-hmm. And publishers started coming in. Maria Shriver and Katie Couric and all these people started sharing it online. I don't know any of those people. They just, all these famous people started sharing it. And then they said, maybe you should make a book about this. And so that's where Make Magic came from. And I love the fact that, you know, for a graduation present, for anyone, you know, the book that says, it's called the Book of Inspiration You Didn't Know You Needed. Anyone who needs inspiration right now, this is definitely the gift for you.
And that is, you think about those young minds, young and old alike, at 70,000 people in that audience connected with even one of the four or a piece of them. Like, the ripple effect of what you did that day is just massive. It's like immeasurable, particularly the empathy, I think.
Yeah. You know, and the thing that really strikes me, and let's talk about some of the other tricks. The second trick in the book is about what you have to make disappear. And I struggled with that one when I was writing it, you know, because everyone says, oh, make your fear disappear. And I was like, no, I want to challenge that. When I was in high school, to make money, I used to work for 4 years in high school at the Haagen-Dazs in the Aventura Mall, scooping ice cream. And this woman, I remember coming up to me, this customer, she starts snapping her fingers at me. She's like, you got to serve me. And I was like, ma'am, I'll be right with you. She says, nope, you got to serve me now. And I said, you know what, ma'am, you're being rude. I'm not serving you. And she starts screaming at me. I'll never forget. She says, you're going to be working at this miserable ice cream store for the rest of your miserable life. And I said, ma'am, I said calmly to her, if I am working here for the rest of my miserable life, you're still never getting any ice cream. And I used to laugh at that story saying, oh, that didn't bother me. But it did bother me. It haunted me. My dad struggled with money his whole life, and it made me feel like my life would be a struggle. And what I also realized, though, is that woman, she drove me. She fueled me like rocket fuel. And to me, again, there's a science behind that. When you have someone who tells you you can't do something, as long as you don't respect them, as long as you don't hold them in high regard, it will act as fuel for you. And that's what you have to do. Don't make your fear disappear, but harness your fear. Use your fear. Don't vanquish your critics. Prove them wrong. And again, when I said that, you could feel the audience erupt. And I was like, you know, and it's just where we are as a culture, especially with, you know, the way we talk to each other now, is right. You know, you can't change other people. What you can do is change your reaction to them.
Absolutely.
100%. And that's part of the genius of this speech. Well, let me preface this by saying this. I don't remember my own college graduation commencement speech. I can't even remember if I went. And if I went, I probably was drunk from the night before. So I can't really even recall. It didn't stick with me, right? And I'm not even one of these people who are big. I know that there are a lot of wonderful keynote speakers at these commencement addresses, and I've never paid attention to a single one. Yours, however, I wasn't exaggerating. I've listened to it multiple times. I'm going to listen to it some more. I'm going to gift it because it transcended the people in your audience. It transcended the graduates. This is, you're precisely right when you say it's advice that you didn't know you needed or inspiration you didn't know you needed. This is life. And it gave me chills. At one point, I was telling these guys off the air. So I bought the audio version. I listened to it a few times. Then I went online and I actually watched your speech on YouTube. And when I was doing that, I teared up. Now here you got to know this.
This does not happen.
It never happens. Never happens.
She is the ice queen.
Right. And a couple of tears, like one or two tears happen. And I'm like, this is just amazing. It felt like a warm blanket. It was not to be all weird and, you know, like woo-woo like that. And that's the genius of this speech. And everybody should listen to it because it will apply to every single set of ears that hears it.
I love you for that. I appreciate it. You know, I think in a weird, you know, when I was putting the speech together, I kept saying to my wife, like, what should we make appear? What should we make disappear? What should we make switch places? And she eventually stopped me and said, Brad, don't worry about it. Just give your son the best life advice you have for him.
Oh.
And when I got that, I was like, oh, that's the magic trick. That's the trick. And I don't think I couldn't have given this speech if I was, you know, when I graduated Michigan, I tried to write, they had a student speaker. Like most colleges have like a student speaker, you try out, you write a speech. I wrote a speech. I literally thought I was going to be picked. I was like, I'm the one they're going to pick. The rule was back then you submit it and then you get picked. And I was like, I'm going to get picked. I didn't even make the second round. I got slaughtered. And I remember I couldn't have given this speech at 22. I couldn't have given it at 32 or 42. Like I needed to go through life and I needed to have, you know, I needed to lose my parents. I needed to bury them. I needed to move on from that and never will I ever move on from that. Because what I learned from that is, you know, I spent many years going, how am I going to get over the death of my parents? How am I going to get over this? And I finally realized I'm never getting over it. I will never get over it. Anyone who has lost someone deep in their soul, you never get over it. What you do is you transform. That's the only thing. Some parts of you stronger, some parts of you weaker, but you are a new version of yourself. And I couldn't have written that last section of the speech about how you transform without having gone through that. And I think, you know, what you're seeing in that speech is, you know, and I think that, you know, if I planned it and I tried to say, I'm going to write something that I hope is transcendent, it would have been garbage. Because it would have been trying for all these hard things. Instead, mm-hmm. I was writing for one person, one of the people I love the most on this planet, and you are seeing all of my love for my child. It's no more or less than anyone loves their child or their niece or nephew or their grandchild or their loved one. And you're getting the love from my parents. You're just seeing it as raw as could be. It just happens to be in front of 70,000 people.
Sorry, just happens to be in front of 70,000
right? I mean,
people.
But right, that's what it is. But thanks, to my wife, I got good advice. And yeah. and the thing that was is I never planned it to be a book. I never planned it to be anything. And you hit it right on the head. You know, I kept asking my friends when they picked me as a speaker. I called all my different friends from all different parts of life, and I said, "What do you remember the most about your graduation speaker? What did they say that stuck with you?" And every single one of them, 100%, said nothing. Yeah. I don't remember a word. So my wife was like, "Well, this is an easy speech because no one will remember anything you say."
Thanks, honey.
Right, but what I did notice is what people said to me was, you know what I do remember is I had just broken up with a girlfriend the day before. I broke up with my boyfriend the day before. I was sleeping with this one the day before. We went and got drunk or we got stoned or we did something the night before. I remember I was hungover at my graduation. They all remembered memories. That's what they had. It had nothing to do with the speaker. And so I went through my own memory. And the only thing I remember from when I graduated, I don't remember anything that the speaker said, nothing, not a word. I was the same. But I remember that it was the year that Desmond Howard, the famous football player, had won the Heisman Trophy. And he was in my class. And so when the speaker in the middle of her speech said, "Hey, is Desmond Howard here?" And as I'm graduating Michigan in front of 70,000 people, Desmond Howard stands up in full cap and gown and does the Heisman pose. He was 10 rows diagonally away from me. I remember staring at him going like, wow, look, excellence is so close to me right here. And one of my fellow students has won the Heisman Trophy. It's incredible. And when I get to the end of the speech that you see, and I encourage you to watch it in Michigan Stadium, I talked about how, you know, there are just past versions of all of us. Is that 22-year-old version of me sitting in the stands watching Desmond Howard do that Heisman pose? But what I realize is magic is never something that you do for yourself. It's a gift you give other people. And a good magician always has another magic trick up their sleeve, because the greatest magic trick of all is, of course, memories. Memories that endure, memories that last, memories that you can feel right now, smell right now as if they just happened. And I said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome my friend Desmond Howard." And 30 years later, Desmond Howard walks out on stage in front of 70,000 people and does the Heisman pose, and the entire stadium nearly explodes. Like, it is, you can't even hear it on the video when you watch it on YouTube. But what I realize is I'm not going to do a speech. I'm going to do a magic trick. And I'm never going to be able to practice it. We never had a practice. We don't know if it's going to work. It's just full commitment to the bit, or it all falls apart, which was Simon Sinek's advice to me. He said, you know, that's how magic is. You fully commit. And I said, I'm going to give everyone, they'll never remember what I say in 30 years, but they're never going to forget this memory I'm going to give them. And it's going to take
and how you made them feel.
That's it. I could just make them feel. And I made, exactly. I created in that stadium a time machine. And every parent in that stadium suddenly became 22 again, like me. And all those kids suddenly watched their life rush forward 30 years. Boom, look at that. Desmond Howard's young, Desmond Howard's old. It's all right here. And we did a magic trick. And of course, I didn't plan to be a book. That's why it became a book, right? Because there was no planning, no forethought. Right? I'm just like, I'm going to create a memory because no one's going to care. And suddenly they're like, you know what? We care about the other part. So it's just been, this is a gift I never knew I was giving myself. And I'm just the lucky one for it.
That's fantastic.
You made a memory for people beyond the 70,000 people that were in that stadium, because you might have just been an ordinary dad giving an ordinary talk to your ordinary kid. But you made everybody who's listened to these words feel something that is so personal to them. And that to me is the magic. You might have made a lot of magic that day. That to me is the magic that you made for me in listening to this speech a million times.
And my question of you is, when it was all said and done, what did your son think of this 13th seed?
Yeah.
And the job that he did and what has become of it?
The thing that's so funny is it was so great because the alumni office there, they said, if you want, tell us where your son's sitting and we'll put a camera on him. I'm like, how am I going to find him? He's like, he's the little white kid is sitting in this, you're never going to find him. Like, how am I going to show you who he is? And my son texts me on the stage and says, Dad, I got here early. I'm in the 14th row. And they put a camera on my son. He didn't know it. It was like hidden away from him. He had no idea who was being photographed. And I encourage you, go to my Instagram page. Go to Brad Meltzer at Instagram.
Totally down there.
And there is a picture right at the top of me pointing to my son and my son's reaction. And they caught it. And it is my favorite picture, maybe of all time, that's ever been taken, because I got to see, my kids make fun of me ruthlessly every day. That is their the favorite sport in their house is how dumb dad is. Like every other dad, everywhere else, like there's no greater contact sport in my house than making fun of me. But on that one day for those 20 minutes, I got to have my son say, "You did it. Good job, Dad." And I'll never happen again. It'll never happen before, but for that one moment, I got to just do right by my boy, and boy, talk about a gift.
Awesome.
Huge.
That is amazing. We could talk to you forever, Brad, but we're going to wrap up now with prolific best-selling author Brad Meltzer, the creator of Make Magic. I urge everybody to buy the book, the audio book, and listen to this. Go on YouTube, watch the speech. You really are onto something when you say ordinary people change the world. They certainly do. You certainly have. And we've really enjoyed talking with you today on the show.
I appreciate it. And the book is beautiful. You'll see when you get the actual book, it's just a gorgeous little gift that you can kind of keep out on your desk or put out on your and give to someone. And it just, you open any page and you can find a little nugget in there. And they just designed it so beautifully.
Well, and we're coming into graduation season, so what better gift can anybody give?
Yeah.
One more question for you, Brad. If people want to learn more about you, follow you, website, social media, buy your book.
Oh, you're kind. Yeah, they just go to bradmeltzer.com. It's like the Brad Seltzer with an M like Mary. It's just the word Seltzer with an M like Mary. But and on social media, Instagram, Facebook, everything is all at Brad Meltzer. You can find me there. And we put out... obviously you can see the speech and you can see lots of clips from it. You can see behind the scenes pictures from it on all of our things. And I love the fact that so many people who want this world to be a kinder, nicer place, who want to, have more empathy in the world, have come and just joined our little invisible army of do-gooders. And, I can't change the minds of adults. It's really hard to change the minds of adults. But we've been arming for the past decade a generation of kids with lessons of kindness and compassion and humility. And I'll take that fight any day.
Absolutely.
And I love all of you. I especially love you all for encouraging that in the universe, because we all need it so desperately right now. We're starving right now for that.
Sergeant.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
In our neck of the woods, you got to come visit us in person.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much, Brad. And I also appreciate the fact that you have, you know, a picture of my my alter ego in your office.
along with there.
Chocolate flavored friend.
Of course.
I have a tattoo of him myself. So we're all good. But anyway, Brad Meltzer, thank you so much for joining us today with Jonas Billboard, Carol Pesci. I am that Frankenberry fella. And you know what? We're not quite done yet. So we'll be back. Segment number three is on the way. So as they say in radio, you know, stick around or something. Thanks.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back one more time here to Happy Hour with Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello. Frankenberry.
Spillmore, will you stop doing that? Every time you do that voice again, I'm expecting you to be wearing like a nightcoat with a come hither finger. You know, and you know. It's
smoking
just like,
cigarette,
yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that, you know, with a cigarette out of the corner of your mouth or something like that. Oh,
my goodness.
Come on. Think of the children, for God's sake. But anyway, Brad Meltzer, he was
fantastic.
Yes, he was fantastic. God. He really was.
What an interesting dude he is.
Yes.
And so humble and grounded and well-spoken and like the whole package. Wow.
Definitely got to go to his Instagram page to find that picture of his son.
I already did. It's awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to go there too. At Brad Meltzer is his.
Well, you know what? I will let one of you two save the picture for me and email it to me because I don't have an Instagram account and I don't feel like signing up for one.
Yeah, can we talk about that? Why don't you just get one?
What do I need an Instagram account for? Seriously, okay. Facebook is the same. You post pictures, okay? I post pictures of cats and I post my stories. That's it. That's all I do. Why do I got to do it twice?
All right, I'm going to tell you why. I mean, we'll send you this photo, but we are on Brad Meltzer's Instagram page, and I'm looking at the photo where he's pointing at his son, and they get his son's reaction. And mm-hmm. I'm going to shed another, like, half a tear. This is going to be, like, three tears in one day.
What is going on?
I can't do no more.
Okay, so what does that have to do with me having an Instagram page?
Oh, because then you can just go yourself. Because then if I have to send you the picture, it's going to be downloaded into my photos. And every time I'm going through my photos, I'm going to see it. I'm probably going to cry again.
No. Well, good. You know what? You need that, Ice Queen. Yeah, you need something to break down those walls a little bit, girlfriend. And maybe I'm the guy to do it.
The irony.
Yeah, you see? Hang on. All right. Well, that was really fantastic.
Awesome.
I guess we got to go.
Yes, we do. And for Jonna Spillmore, for Carol Pesci, and myself, this Frankenberry guy, thank you very, very much again to Brad Meltzer for joining us today. And we'll be back again next week. Same time, right here. That's a warning. Talk to you then.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spillmore and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104Online.com.